Hello and welcome. My name is Patrick Campbell, and I am a senior editor with Endocrinology Network. In this episode of the Endocrine Outlook, you will hear from Dr. Joshua Denson of Tulane University Medicine. In the episode, we discuss the results of a recent study he led examining the effects of metabolic syndrome on outcomes in patients with coronavirus disease 2019 in a predominantly Black population. Results of the study suggest individual components of metabolic syndrome were not associated with worsening outcomes, but their combined presence in the form of metabolic syndrome resulted in more severe outcomes among this patient population. For more on how this might inform the treatment of patients with metabolic syndrome and COVID-19, Endocrinology Network invited Denson to take part in this edition of the Endocrine Outlook.
So my name is Josh Denson. I am an assistant professor at Tulane School of Medicine and Tulane Medical Center in New Orleans, Louisiana.
Thank you for that, Dr. Denson. Mm-hmm. Now, the study we'll be discussing today is the one that you recently authored or led, and it was published in Diabetes Care, Metabolic Syndrome and COVID-19 Mortality Among Adult Black Patients in New Orleans. Now, I have to ask you, first things first, what was the most notable difference for you when looking at these results in regard to racial disparities in outcomes?
You know, I think it wasn't particularly geared towards to evaluate racial disparities, to be honest. You know, the reason we initiated this study is I've been taking care of patients with COVID since diagnosing the first critically ill case in Louisiana, like back in early March. And so I see this trend of these certain types of patients that tend to do much worse than a lot of people with COVID-19. And it's hard to discern who's going to do poorly or not and how much risk there is. But what we've seen, at least in New Orleans, and is that patients with obesity, diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol tend to do much worse. And that seems to be irrespective of age. And honestly, the more of these factors that you have if you're younger is a risk factor. Now, our population is predominantly our population that was affected by the virus was predominantly African American here in New Orleans, and so I think just as our patient population that was affected. Now, obviously, a disparity has a lot to do with that. We weren't able to get that information to look at that, but we're looking at another studies with some of my co-authors. But I think we, you know, at least what we suspect is that the essential workers may have been hit the hardest up front, and our patient population is a bit unique. We're not the healthiest city in the world. And I think that maybe we had a little bit of susceptibility compared to other places.
All right, thank you for that. And now one of the more interesting findings, not that they all weren't interesting, but one of the most interesting findings from your study was that metabolic syndrome was associated with this increased risk of mortality, but the individual components of it were not associated with increased mortality. Do you care to give your thoughts on why you think that was? And is it really just sort of this perfect storm that occurs when you have the criteria for metabolic syndrome?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, like I said in the beginning, I mean, the first case I had was a young person with this set of problems, right? Very obese, diabetes, and high blood pressure. You know, as we saw these cases coming in, I mean, I had some last week, and we're seeing a lot of this. And I believe there's definitely some, my hypothesis that there's a mechanistic link between obesity, diabetes, and metabolic syndrome. And the reason we looked at metabolic syndrome and not just diabetes or not just obesity is previously I've done some work with looking at obesity and asthma, and I know of the association that carries that with metabolic syndrome and the underlying inflammatory pathway that's associated with that. So I hypothesize that that could be a driver of some interaction with the virus, with the host, with our bodies and our immune system that goes along with metabolic syndrome and the virus. And I don't know what that is yet. It's tough to evaluate that yet. We're working on it. But that is what I suspect, because some of my patients will have diabetes and high blood pressure, but they may not have obesity, or they'll have obesity, but they won't have diabetes, and they'll have high blood pressure and high cholesterol. So, you know, they don't always fit in the perfect box. No one ever does. But the unique or unifying aspect to what I noticed these patients having was they fit in one of these categories, and they often had at least two or three of these diagnoses. And knowing the inflammatory cascade that's associated with that, which is different than what we typically think of for most respiratory viruses, right? If you take the flu, for example, obese patients do worse with the flu when they get ARDS. They don't necessarily have higher mortality, but they tend to get worse, more severe disease. And the same thing can be said for the other conditions. And what we found in our study was if you look at obesity alone, diabetes alone, high blood pressure alone, all of these, they tended to increase your risk for more severe disease. But it wasn't until we put them together where it really showed a much stronger or what we're calling more of a composite outcome. It seemed to be when you put these together, it really increased your risk dramatically. So that's kind of why we looked into that and what we found there.
Thank you for that. And now I was hoping you could touch on a lot of the components associated with metabolic syndrome are sort of modifiable risk factors associated with other diseases. I think the COVID-19 pandemic has really sort of underlined what physicians and clinicians have been saying for years and years and years, and that's that you have to address these underlying risk factors such as obesity, hypertension, and diabetes. Do you think that the COVID-19 pandemic has done that and sort of re-highlighted the importance of managing these factors?
I mean, I think it should. And, you know, this is really bad in the United States, and the obesity epidemic and diabetes epidemic in the U.S. is, as anyone can look at, the evidence is very clear that it's dramatically worsened over the past couple decades. And for whatever reason, this virus tends to affect those patients. And, you know, we tend to ignore this, right? You know, you'll see it on TV that a lot of this patient was healthy, but really he had obesity. And he had pre-diabetes, and he may have had high blood pressure, but he's still labeled as healthy just because he's living with these diseases. Does that make sense? And so although, you know, that's why I think it's an important thing, an important point to highlight is that a lot of people think they're living healthily and they don't have any major medical problems, which are the typical ones we would see people with the flu suffer from, bad lung disease, bad heart disease, you know, cancer, transplants, other really serious medical conditions. People in the U.S. and around the world still may not view early diabetes and early obesity and early controlled high blood pressure as serious medical conditions. And I think that's one of the take-home points from this is that, you know, if you have one of these conditions, controlled, even controlled diabetes, that's what we included. And you should be worried about, you should be taking extra precaution to prevent getting COVID-19 and try to live a healthier lifestyle because it actually could help you survive this illness if you get it. We don't know that yet. I can't say that yet. That's extrapolating. But, you know, that would be one hypothesis, though.
I'm not sure, even though it hasn't been proven, I'm not sure there's too many that would disagree with you on that.
Right. I don't think so.
Now, I have to ask you, the study period was just from the end of March to the beginning of April, and that was the peak of the outbreak for many places in the United States. Do you think that could have sort of limited the results of your analysis in any way?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I mean, we're doing our best to get as much data as we can. And that was the peak of our epidemic here in New Orleans. And just in that one, you know, week or so period at two hospitals, we had almost 300 patients in the hospital. And so we had, you know, we kind of wanted to move forward to get this, what association we're seeing and clinically into the medical literature to look at it further and honestly get other people to look at this. And we're doing more studies to try to validate our own findings in larger cohorts. And it's possible, you know, that first wave was so severe, you know, people weren't wearing masks. They weren't segregating themselves off and socially distancing. And, you know, maybe there was it breeded a certain population at risk population. So obviously there's always a chance, it's a retrospective study, there's always a chance for selection bias and other types of bias that you try to take into account, but you really never fully can do. So again, I don't think this is by any means conclusive. I think it is very important to pay attention to and that others need to be looking at this too. And we need to figure this out because I do strongly believe there's a mechanistic link between obesity, diabetes, and COVID-19 that's unusual from other viruses we've encountered.
Now, have the results of the study, usually just the hindsight's 2020. So when you look back at the results of the study, I'm sure you learned things about the patterns related to risk factors and mortality within these health systems that you didn't even realize in real time. Has there been any change in the way that risk is stratified among these patients admitted to Tulane University Health Systems based on the study?
Nothing officially. In the ICU, I will look for these comorbidities more actively when people are first admitted. Obviously it's not published, but anecdotally, I'm discovering a lot of new diabetics among these patients. So in my view, I've started checking an A1C for patients that are admitted with COVID-19 because I've diagnosed probably in a week and a half period, 5 new diabetes diagnoses in these patients. And these are not severe out of control diabetics. Although some, I would anecdotally think that there's definitely an association. We are seeing a lot more DKA in these patients. A lot of patients are presenting in DKA with COVID. And then I'm finding a lot of mild diabetics, an A1C just above 6.5 to 7 or pre-diabetics that are developing severe disease. Because if they get to me, usually they're severe in the ICU, right? I'm not seeing them in the ER, so I don't know yet for that population, but I can tell you at least among a small group of patients I'm seeing in the ICU. But that's completely anecdotal. All I know is from what we've been able to publish so far, and in a peer-reviewed publication. And so that's what I probably would stand by. Maybe it should. I think I would argue checking these early in admission may be able to predict, this guy, maybe we'll hold him one more day or not send him home on oxygen because he may have a risk of getting sicker, things like that.
It may be anecdotal, but I do believe I've read a number of studies suggesting that that type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes diagnoses have been a bit delayed and people have been presenting with more severe DKA after the peak of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Now, for you, as someone who works in an ICU, what kind of impact did you see early on in the pandemic in terms of sort of people not coming for emergency services out of fear of the COVID-19 pandemic?
I think that we definitely, in the beginning, in the peak of the pandemic, we weren't seeing as many of the medical cases that we normally see. Although I think we've definitely come back up to that level now. We're seeing a lot more just routine medical problems, septic shock in patients with cancer and, heart attacks and strokes and all the usual things. And do I think there was a delay in care that made some of these patients worse? Possibly, because there are probably some cases that wanted to avoid seeing the doctor and avoid having procedures done if they weren't absolutely necessary. I don't know how much it's truly playing a role in our caseload right now, but in my opinion, I think, it probably contributed to some more severe disease among the general population right now.
All right. And now, is there anything else that you think it's important for clinicians or care providers that read your study to keep in mind when interpreting the results?
No, it's still early. There's a number of studies that are looking at diabetes and obesity independently. And I think this is when people are writing articles, editorials about the association of metabolic syndrome with COVID-19, but our study is the first to really look at it as in a research study as a composite outcome, right? To see what's the risk with it. And we're showing anywhere from 3 to 5 times risk depending on the outcome. I mean, it's a 3 times risk, 300% increased odds of death and 5 times risk for developing ARDS. And this is compared to a group of patients that, although they didn't meet diagnostic criteria for metabolic syndrome, it's still not a healthy population. And if you look at the numbers in our study, of all patients that were hospitalized during this time period, 66% of them met criteria for metabolic syndrome. And so although I can't prove this, it does highlight the fact that the people that are actually getting into the hospital and needing to be in the hospital may be these patients. So we're already looking among a sick population. And so this may be able to look at in the outpatient setting too, if you're seeing these comorbidities, that to have a little bit of more alert that these people could decompensate. And this disease is a long drawn out process. It's not a come hit you hard. It takes about a week or two to start seeing the severe manifestations. And the last point I'd say is, although our study is new and looked at in a different way, you know, you can look back at the original data from China and New England Journal papers. And if you look into the data, although it wasn't talked about much up front, diabetes was alone an independent risk factor for needing the ICU. They didn't look at obesity in those studies, but that was something I always noticed from the very beginning, and I was wondering why that would be. Because, yeah, we diabetics get sick, and they get heart disease, they get kidney disease and eye disease, but we don't usually suffer more from a viral-induced ARDS. And so that's what triggered my initial thought process for this, and then we see all the patients with it now. So, you know, I don't know. You can interpret the study how you want. I hope it adds something to heighten everyone's attention towards these risk factors, and hopefully it'll lead to more discovery for what is the link here. Because I at least from seeing these patients, I think there's no doubt in my mind that there is a link. I just don't know what that is yet.
All right, and just lastly, before I let you go, could you take me through and sort of compare for me with the pre-COVID time, what it was like for you, the process of sort of research and submitting your research in such an accelerated pace? This, I'm sure, was nothing like you've experienced before. Such a quick turnaround from treatment to actual analysis and then publishing. What was it like from your perspective?
It's a great question. I think there's a lot of opinions on this, which are also being published rapidly. I think that I'm a clinical researcher more than a basic scientist. And I think it's important to have transparency in what you're doing, and getting research out there in a timely manner is super important. And we're seeing unprecedented times for that, and learning about disease and people's results in real time. Unfortunately, it's also led to a little bit of early adoption, right? Whether it's hydroxychloroquine or the retracted papers out of certain journals. That needed, you know, very large impact driving papers that needed to be retracted because they just didn't pick up on peer review. So, you know, we even considered a pre-publication, but we decided it was best to go through the peer review process, even though with it being as expedited as we could. But we felt it was important, and it's a balance. I don't know the right answer. My view is, it's tricky. My view is that I think it's good to get that information out. I do. But there maybe should be some, it depends on the impact of the research. And maybe there should be some pre-screening before it's released. Or, and you'll never be able to do this on the backside, right? Once the media grabs a paper, even if it's just been, let's say I put it on the internet, it's out there in the world. If people are grabbing hold of that and they're so hopeful for a cure, a vaccine, a treatment, something, people are grabbing that as true, and educating the community and the media and everyone in the world about how research is performed, and that there needs to be some checks and balances, maybe is something that we should be promoting more. It always comes down to education and communication. So trying to improve that. I'm in favor of getting results out quick. I am. I just think we need to be aware of what we're putting out there, because knowledge is power, but also can be dangerous. So,
yeah, I totally agree. It was definitely a fine line to tread that seems to have gotten even more difficult, and more people have, in the general public, have had a want and need for this information. But that is about it on my questions. Thank you for taking the time to speak with me today. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem.
That's it for this episode of the Endocrine Outlook. I'm Patrick Campbell. Thank you for listening.